In our recent podcast with Jim Roth from Salesforce, I mentioned I had watched a webinar co-hosted by Nick Mehta, the CEO of Gainsight. In the webinar, Nick mentioned a book by Frank Slootman titled Amp It Up. Nick said it was a great book, but it had this chapter that basically stated customer success was a fad. So I got the book, read it, definitely a great read for tech professionals, but I do think Frank got it wrong on his analysis on why companies do not need a customer success function. So I wrote this blog responding to that chapter. We put it out there in the public domain, get some discussion going, and the timing is important because our research shows the technology companies are absolutely debating the value of the CS function. I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association, and welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today we are bringing back another Tectonic veteran, Nick himself, the CEO of Gainsight, the person that inspired me to write this freaking blog here. So we're going to get the insight engine going. Welcome, Nick. Glad to see you again. And I think I'm bringing you back in interesting times for sure. There's no doubt that CS organizations are under a lot of pressure to defend their business value for the companies that they're serving.
Yeah.
To unfold this conversation, you know, I want to go back in time. I want to start in the way back machine here because you've been the CEO of Gainsight for over a decade. So let's go back to like 2014, about 10 years ago. Why were companies investing in customer success a decade ago? What did you see?
Yeah. So it's really interesting because I think you're right that things evolve a lot as you grow. And in some ways, customer success is such a broad thing that there are multiple things inside it and multiple reasons people do it and multiple ways to do it. And I think some of the confusion is like lumping it all together. And you guys at TSI have done an amazing job of helping people understand that and benchmark. We're a customer of yours and we do a lot with that. So when I think about it, go back 10 years, 11 years, and it's kind of almost hard for people to imagine because it was really different. We were going through this transition and, you know, you guys famously talked about swallowing the fish and transitioning from an on-prem model to a cloud model and a SaaS model. And, you know, of course, the early pioneers like Salesforce realized you sell software that has a low barrier to exit, like SaaS. If you don't make sure customers are getting value and using it, then they're going to leave you, right? And so early on, it really was about churn mitigation. In fact, Salesforce, who truly gets credit for creating the term CS and the original pioneering model, they measured attrition as like their core metric. In fact, they still report on that today, right? And so it was about preventing loss. And early on, it might have been kind of like the cable company when you try to cancel, try to convince you not to cancel. And it kept kind of getting more and more proactive. And then as we'll talk about, it evolved into a lot of different dimensions based on if you're a startup or if you're a growth company or you're more mature, if you're a big public company, you're transitioning to cloud. Each of these ends up with different flavors. And this is one of the things I think people wrestle with is it changes a lot and it varies a lot for good reason, right? It's not like everyone should have the exact same customer success strategy. And again, you guys do a good job advising people on that.
Yeah. So this thing about, you know, adoption being so important. And it's amazing because over time, it really has become ubiquitous, right? So over 70% of the technology companies that we survey say they have a distinct customer success organization. And that includes hardware companies, you know, companies that have been around for 40 years, right? So like everybody has customer success, but now there's a lot of pressure to take that separate function and collapse it into something specifically with support. And we just had Jim on the podcast and, you know, Salesforce has brought those two organizations together, right? It's called customer success, but it now, you know, entails customer success and support, you know, motions there.
I think he also has training, by the way, as well, which is another
whole other thing. Education's in there as well. Exactly. And so what are you seeing there on that trend, that pressure to say, well, you know, do we really need CS as separate? Maybe it's really just a support type thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, again, multiple pieces to this. So one variant is, okay, I wanted the goal, like, let's put aside whatever the like aspirational goals are, the human goals, the like financial goal is getting customers stay longer and spend more money with you, right? And again, I'm not saying it's the end all be all goal, but that's the thing that pays bills, right? Sure. And, you know, the way you do that is all kinds of stuff, right? Build a product that's really good and also really sticky and sell it really well, have a great sales team. But part of it is actually that post-sales experience. And again, you and I probably both agree. Every time I say the word post-sales, I cringe because that's not really a thing anymore. It's all together in a loop. But you know, after that initial sale, what happens? And as you know well, there's many pieces of that. There's certainly a CSM team that's trying to drive adoption of value, but there's a services team or an onboarding team that's getting the customer set up and enabled. There's a training team to make sure they understand how to use this stuff. There's maybe a CSM team. There's probably just still some touch from a sales or account management person. There is maybe a community that the customers all interact in. There's a renewal process, and then there's support. And you know, you look for, particularly for products that are complex, so much of that customer experience is in support. You know, and like look at Salesforce as an example, because I've met Jim a few times, such a great leader. And like you look at Salesforce, and part of it is very mission critical. And so I got to make sure it's performing and working. And I could be the best CSM in the world, but if there's an outage or if it's not technically working, like I'm not adding value. So part of it is like integrating the customer journey. So that's what theme number one. That's where the chief customer officer concept started emerging, and you put support and professional services and customer success management and training and community and maybe some other stuff underneath it. And, you know, in our data points, you know, about 40% of companies over 100 million of ARR have a CCO. And of course, that might vary and you might have slightly different data points, but it's definitely a trend, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Though, which I think I learned a lot from Jim about is how over time you can then bundle that customer success resource with premium support, with training, with maybe some other stuff, and turn that into a monetized package. And that's really interesting because then you start being a revenue driver, more self-sustaining, more self-funding, because otherwise you're a cost center and there's a lot of budget pressure, right? So that's a second trend. I don't personally think that works if your product isn't already mission critical because people are just not going to pay for it.
Yeah.
But I think as products become more mission critical, I'm seeing that more and more. And then the third trend organizationally, which we could certainly click into, Salesforce didn't do this, but some others are, is saying, you know what? I want the whole journey integrated end to end. And I want somebody over the whole thing, not the CEO, but like president, some people would say a CRO, chief revenue officer. It's pre and post sales shouldn't be this big dichotomy and handoff, right? So that last one is there in certain kinds of companies. It's not perfect for everyone, but those are the three organizational trends I see when I look at CS.
Yeah. And I think that there's really a lot of important thoughts that you put on the table there and things I think the audience has got to be really on top of. So first of all, there is pressure to combine organizations for cost savings. I think there's no doubt about that. And we actually, our perspective is convergence is not a bad thing. So breaking down some of these stovepipes that existed, like hard stovepipes between support and education and CS, and getting that into a more, in a sense, blended organization, which is exactly, I think, where Jim has had some real gains, right? I think that's good and it creates a better customer experience, right? But I think what's so important here is you can't lose the muscle that you built with CS, because CS is, and always will be, I believe, you know, the adoption muscle. You know, education is great at training, support is great on helping resolve technical issues, but CS, we created this thing to help drive adoption. And when you create these more blended models, don't wipe that CS capability off the table, because you're going to regret that down the road, you know, in terms of growth and all that kind of fun stuff. So I think that, you know, that's where people have got to be careful. If we talk about organizational structure for a minute, we riff on that. You're talking about the emergence of the CCO, the CRO. I think we just did a paper on success-centric organizational structures. I think a great winning model is that companies have a CRO and a CCO that are peers and work, you know, really tightly together. And the CRO is all about optimizing revenue growth, you know, across all channels. And the CCO is all about, once we get the customer on our platform, everything involved with making sure they're successful, happy, all that kind of stuff. I think that's a good working model, but it is, I think, emerging. I think the structures are starting to change, which brings me to a question around the relationship between CS in sales, because that's another big thing that's on the operating table. And in fact, sales in general, I think in tech is on the operating table. I think people are really thinking what got me here for the last 40 years in terms of selling tech may not be the winning model moving forward. So what do you see in there between CS and sales?
Yeah, it's actually fascinating too. I actually did a LinkedIn post on this today. I think there's a couple different dynamics happening. One is what I would say I learned from you all, which is, I remember being at TSW, your conference, maybe 2-3 years ago, you'd know the exact time when you guys started talking about the different, like, how do we get the right, each type of sale done in the most efficient manner possible?
Right.
Right. So a renewal sale versus a small expansion versus a cross sell, net new logo. Right. And I think for a long time, companies put it like, the on-prem model was, the rep does everything. I'm going to pay him on total contract value. And whether it was a renewal that was kind of like a slam dunk from the beginning, or it was getting a net new land, which is really hard, you get the same subscription dollars. And frankly, a lot of those companies slowed down because the reps stopped focusing on new stuff. And so I think you guys did an amazing job of saying, look, it's not just about squeezing cost out of post sales. It's about how do we get more efficient in sales too.
That's right. I don't
think the market has fully all gotten there yet, you know, to my dismay. Yeah. I think they're and I think CEOs are starting to disambiguate, you know, hey, I have these different types of sales and let's make each one have the right channel. And as an example, can I do small upsells through my CSM team or something like that in a lower cost manner? Like, should I really be paying a $300,000 OT on target earnings rep to do like 10 user $2,000 upsell? And by the way, in some cases, the rep didn't even want to do it. It's like a waste of their time, right? And so I think that's one thing that's changing is people are getting more aware of kind of a lot of the stuff you guys have talked about. I think the second thing on CS and sales is everyone knows that the collaboration is so important. It's kind of a cliche, but putting it into sort of some operational models. So some examples there. One example is the pod model. You know, I was at an event, one of our customers, a company called Miro. It's like a super hot whiteboarding company, digital whiteboarding. They do other collaboration stuff. It's a great company. And actually, very interesting story where the CCO runs sales and CS. Yep. Her name is Sangeetha Chakrabarty, really smart. And she was talking about how they created these pods. And a lot, some folks have done this now where there's a pod with, you know, CSM and an account executive and an SDR and a sales engineer. And they share accounts together. And that creates that collaboration, which at the end of the day is really where the rubber meets the road, is just like the human connection and learning how to complete each other's sentences, right? And help each other out. That's one trend, one sort of tactic. Another one is really mapping out an end-to-end value journey. And that's the whole idea of, you know, what's the value we're promising? What's the value we've scoped out? What's the value we're implementing? And what's the value we've actually delivered? And then creating a value framework. What are the types of value we drive in our company? Creating like different systems and processes. You know, people use Gatesight, some of that post-sale and maybe some of that pre-sale. There's some value tools out there and linking it all together. And so making sure that what we promised is what we're actually delivering and not having that awkward handoff. A third one that I've seen is when you look at that value journey, right? One of the things that, and this is, I would call more like innovative, cutting edge, maybe crazy. I don't know. I talked to a couple customers, one yesterday, who has a model where he has the actual sales engineer, what we might call sales engineer, he calls a value engineer, be the person who manages the customer post sale. And again, I don't think this is easy to do, particularly about a high volume of customers. But they happen to have a very high touch business, a few hundred very large customers. And so when they sell a customer, like, you know what, account executive and the value engineer that are promising you this stuff are going to be the same people on the hook for delivering it. And that's obviously a very unconventional model. And like I said, actually complicated, but it's pretty interesting because you kind of say, look, I'm going to make sure that what I promise is what I deliver. So I think whether you solve it through process, you solve it through like odd model, or you solve it through like a individual person being the same, getting to the where we eliminate the line between pre-sales and post-sales. Like we should just eliminate, I'm actually searching for the new terminology and maybe you have it. We need to eliminate the whole concept of pre versus post-sale because that's not what the customer experience is.
Yeah, I think you said a lot of things that were incredibly simpatico around it. I want to take them down sort of one by one, going back to this first one around sort of people starting to really click into the cost of sales and trying to be smarter there. I am seeing more and more energy around that. And I just wrote a paper, it's called The Growing Expectations Performance Gap and what's going on there. A lot of these sales organizations are being capped right now for headcount growth. We did a poll about 2 months ago, 70% of the people said that their sales reps, the headcount there is either flat or declining, right? So people are starting to really look for that cost. And I think that a CRO, right? A CRO, if they're really doing their job, they are, I call them enlightened CROs. They really are following the data, looking at the analytics, and they're looking across all the channels, thinking about the best way to take the money off the table. And so I think that is a muscle we're building, but you're right, not everybody's there yet. In terms of, you know, you talk about that, the process between the salespeople and the CS and et cetera. I agree with you, you know, having a common customer engagement model there that both teams are operating on. I'm sure you see a lot of CS organizations say, well, here's our engagement model. You know, here's how we work with customers. Here's our key milestones. Here's whatever. Oh, and sales has like a completely different model that they run to. And it doesn't make sense, right? They should be the same thing. But the last thing there on the innovative, trying to, you know, crack the code differently. You know, I was on a long bike ride a couple of days ago. And I was thinking about this issue. In tech companies, do you ever see, you know, a function that says, look, our job is to basically engineer the customer experience soup to nuts, right? To really keep studying about where they've fallen down, where the friction points, where the handoffs broke, that like that's their job. I mean, and they can influence product, they can influence sales, they can influence CS or services, but I don't see that is typically or ever as a dedicated function. I don't even know if there's a role there, but do you see any?
I actually do. And it's interesting. I'll connect the enlightened CRO comment to this too, because I think one of the challenges like software is going through, or tech is going through, because it's a blip, we're in a reckoning, you know, and I think everyone feels it. And I think there's this challenge of like, for a long time, we've been flying the airplane. And by the way, we didn't even realize we have this huge tailwind at our back, which is zero interest rates, right? And now we're fly the tailwind. We've got the plane. We've got a huge headwind, which is higher interest rates. And we got to retool the plane at the same time. And I think the enlightened CRO or the enlightened chief customer officer and the enlightened CS executive, the balance is I am somebody who can execute, which most people in those roles know how to do that, operationalize, which is all the process and analytics, and strategize, which means rethinking things. So now let's click to your question. I think a lot of companies, they just, what do they say? If all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. If all I know is traditional sales and CS, everything looks like another AE or CSM solves the problem.
That's right.
Right? Let's get another AE, then CSM. And what people are starting to do is say, you know what? I want to invest at that operational layer. I want to invest in that strategic layer. So what does that mean? Well, I'm going to have some part of my org be more process and operations oriented. I'm going to take less CSM headcount, less sales headcount, because I believe I'm going to make them more productive. So people are investing more in CS ops and sales ops they've had for a while, but I think they're making it more strategic. And then that top layer, which is what you said, is, okay, what's the strategic thing? Like, how do we do things really differently? And the only way you could do that is have really good intelligence about that customer journey. So long way of saying, I am seeing it. I'm seeing people that now report to, let's say, a chief customer officer whose title might be VP of strategy and operations. And before their title might have been VP of operations, right? They may be in the person to implement Gainsight or do the reporting or whatever. And now they're doing this analysis of the journey. They're hiring consultants or they're doing it internally. They're creating programs to influence product and stuff like that. And it takes a CCO or a CRO that's truly enlightened with the intestinal fortitude to go to their boss, the CEO or whoever, and say, you know what? I'm going to make this bet. And I don't think we need more AEs or CSMs. I think we need this instead. You know, by the way, many CEOs are also stuck in the 1.0 version. So they're going to say, no, we just need more reps than CSMs. We need these overhead roles. But the enlightened CCO or CRO is able to convince them they're wrong.
I mean, what you're chipping on there is the fact that, you know, I think that as our organizational models evolve here in tech, you know, there's going to be a lot more leverage, a lot more leverage from technology, data, AI tools. And so what you're talking about is, you know, you're saying, look, we're going to place bets there. We're going to invest in operational roles and infrastructure, you know, capabilities and tools, et cetera, so that, you know, maybe we triple a rep's quota because they can take down a lot more, you know, with the environment. But I think that people are absolutely looking for leverage. I think AI has been a huge sort of eye opener there, an accelerator for how people are thinking.
One comment I make on that too, by the way, if you think about it from a basic economics perspective, interest rates are the destiny of all businesses. And in a world where interest rates are high, I think two factors happen that tie to this leverage comment, because leverage is the word of the day or the year or the decade. So one factor is that in your own business, there's more economic need for profits today versus tomorrow. And therefore, companies have to be more profitable. The double whammy is your customers are less able to make long-run investments because they too need profits today, not tomorrow. So what happens? Sales slow down for like 99.999% of software and tech companies. If you're slowing down and interest rates are high, you need to get more profitable. Yeah. How do you get more profitable? Leverage, right? So what you have now is a situation where the only way a lot of software companies are going to get to good value is to get operating margins in the like 40-50% level. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, the great ones have done that, Microsoft, Oracle, et cetera. But you see what's happening at Salesforce. I think it's so instructive where they went for so long at roughly 0% plus or minus operating margin. And now they're in the 30s, like in a year and a half, right? Like, and Jim is part of that transition. And it's hard. And there's a lot of people implications, which I have empathy for. Nonetheless, the economy is the economy. And what's happening is leverage is the word of the day. And so if you're a enlightened CCO or CRO, what are you going to do to drive leverage? That's the only thing that matters. You know, AI, rethink the journey, automation, whatever it is, leverage. That's what matters.
Yeah. And I'll give you some data here. So every quarter, Vanessa and I, we do this webinar on the TQR 50. So we look at 50 of the largest tech companies, at their financials. And we look at the Cloud 40 as well. We have another index that we talk about. And I'll give you an update on the Cloud 40 here for the Q2 snapshot, calendar Q2. On average, those companies are now, their operating, net operating income is positive 1%. That's the first time in the history of that index. I can tell you, a year ago, on average, those companies were negative 8% operating income. Okay. So they, to your point, the needle has moved dramatically in a short amount of time, right? For a lot of these SaaS companies, faster than I ever thought they could do it. That's the good news. Here's the bad news, though. My belief is that that has been done mostly through labor arbitrage.
Yes.
Right?
100%.
Right. So, okay. So now we're on the theme that you're on, which is now we can't just keep cutting into, you know, to bone here. We just can't keep, you know, taking people out. We need to get, you know, from 1% to 5% to 10% to 20% operating income. We need to get leverage. We have the same amount of people, but how do we make them more efficient, more effective? And I think that's where the game is turning now. Because again, the easy lever to pull is labor, and we've done that. But I think that that's about out of gas. So it's going to be super interesting the next couple of years.
And I love talking to you because I love nerding out on this stuff. So it's super cool. And I totally agree that, I mean, it's two comments I make on that. Number one is, yeah, it's great stat. I 100% agree that like the low-hanging fruit was the labor inefficiencies or arbitrage or whatever. You run out of low-hanging fruit. In fact, I think most companies are running out of that. Now, the second point I'd make is what's quite interesting is public companies are so inefficient. So in other words, we're majority owned by Vista, a private equity firm, great firm. And there's another firm called Thoma Bravo, which is also very well known. Founder Thoma Bravo has some great quotes. And one of them, he's just like, all these public companies are so poorly run because it's not because the CEOs are bad. It's because they can't make those changes as quickly as needed, right? Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these private companies that, you know, the equivalent of what you just described are taking operating margins from zero and in 1 year to 15%, another year to 25. And to your point, the first year is easy. Well, it's intellectually easy. On a human level, it's very hard. It's cuts or outsourcing or automation, whatever. The second year or the third year is rethinking things. It's looking at that consumer journey. It's looking at automation. It's product investments. That's intellectual. That's the enlightened CCO or CRO.
Yeah. And again, I think that's where the game's going to have to be played for sure here in the next couple of years. That's why, you know, by the way, I mean, I think it's so impressive when you look at a company like a Microsoft or a Salesforce that makes big moves in their operating model and they do that in the public domain. I think that's super impressive. Well, hey, since I have you here, we've got to talk a little bit more about AI because I was on the Gainsight website and it was this headline, you know, AI for teams, AI made for customers, AI made for real people. I mean, AI is everywhere. So, you know, what are you seeing in terms of how it's changing the customer success function, customer success workflows? What's your vantage point there?
It's quite interesting. I'm getting a lot of data on it from a couple lenses. One is, of course, like we built a lot of AI stuff in Gainsight. So people are using it. We're getting feedback. Another one is we, of course, have our own internal team and we use AI, not just in Gainsight, but other stuff. And then the third one is just like you, I do tons of events and every one is like the icebreaker is always how are you using your AI in your customer journey right now? And also a little fun of how do they use it in their personal life. And so here's what I've learned so far. I'll start with the last question. So everyone, every CCO worth their salt is thinking about AI. Mm-hmm. Most of them don't know. It's very complicated stuff. It's moving fast. So they don't really fully understand it. And I don't fault them for it because it's hard stuff. And I think anyone watching, like, it's a tough balance. Like, you will not have a career in knowledge worker in 3 years if you don't understand AI. Mm-hmm. But also, I am empathy that it's hard. It's moving fast. It's very technical. Nonetheless, people are powering through. And the CCOs, if I said that the center of the storm, and you guys, you know, some of your researchers are writing about this, is support for sure. Like, that's by far the mega trend is going to be. How do I automate L1? How do I give better experience in L2, the level 2 support? Mm-hmm. There, people are doing, I think I'll kind of like the trifecta, which is the copilot for the agent to help. That's like the low-hanging fruit is the assistant for the agent in your service product. Let's say it's a service cloud from Salesforce or a Zendesk or something else. That agent having that, you know, hey, case came in, here's the recommended solution, here's the sample email, make the agent more productive. Second thing in support that is super hot is the manager having better tools using AI for quality, for escalation avoidance, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Those internal tools, like people are really doing it now. Yep, they're not all absolutely perfect.
Yeah,
there's like a lower risk because it's not facing the customer. And then there's the holy grail, the customer facing AI driven experience, right? Inside that are two parts. There's the chatbot, like definitely the thing everyone would think about is like the brilliant, not the crappy chatbot that we have all experienced in websites, but the AI driven chatbot. I think there people are moving carefully because they want to be careful because it's complicated and it's got to get it right. AI is not deterministic, so you don't know it's always going to work. And then actually the other one, which is where we're doing a bunch of stuff in, is the world of like the self-service portal, you know? So we actually have our own self-service portal now, and we've got our own community technology and training and knowledge base. How do you obfuscate all that for the customer? So they just go in and say, here's my problem. Yep. And whether it was a community post or training or knowledge base, it just gives you the answer, like kind of like ChatGPT would. All that's in support and kind of the training and community world. How do I get customers to be able to do more themselves, right? And a second lens that is coming up is the area of how do I do a better job truly having an early warning on customers, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a CS person, that's a huge part of your job is to not be surprised. And, you know, what I'd argue is, you know, whether it's, I think we're just guilty part number one, Gainsight and all this sort of tech, it was sort of giving an early warning, but actually give you, I'd still call a late warning. And what I mean by that is if you're looking at, let's say the product usage and you're saying, hey, if it drops by this much, you know, have CSM call. Often that's like late in the cycle. The customer may even have made up their mind. They may be offboarding, right? NPS response often late in the cycle. Early in the cycle, what is it? Well, it's actually like the conversations and the communications and all that and the slight frustration or the workarounds or the lack of value. And it's not always easy for humans to detect that, as well as if there's lots of people talking to the customer, they don't all know the big picture. And that's where the brilliant generative AI, it's like the thing it's best at is understanding conversations, the human language, right? And so we have stuff in Gainsight now that'll analyze all the emails and calls and all that and give you like sentiment in a really like rich way, not just the basic stuff. So a second theme is around early warning. A third theme is around productivity. So I'd argue for customer facing employees, whether you think of CSMs or salespeople, we have deluged them with manual work. Like again, I think Gainsight's guilty party number one, along with probably CRM. Yeah, what's your job? Your job is to just update Gainsight all day. that sucks, right? That's not, nobody wants to do that. It's inefficient. And I think people are starting to say, how do we automate more? You know, we do now we do automated note-taking, but also all kinds of other interesting things like automated pull out the person's title and update the CRM and automated, you know, understand like even what are they into? Like you're a cyclist and figuring that out and then putting that into a field so the next person that talks to you or prepping your executive shouldn't be manual anymore, should be automated. And so we're seeing people just try to, we call it removing the grunt work. So there's the like self-service experience and making that not suck, which historically it sucked.
Yeah.
There's getting a true early warning. There's eliminating grunt work. And then the final trend that I see, which I think is the aspirational one, but the most powerful. Today, what you have in companies is all these people touching customers, right? And so for a given customer, as we talked about, services, support, sales, customer success, right? So there's a problem there of knowledge. But then you look the other dimension across all your customers, right? You've all these customers and there's so much knowledge in your company. In fact, the union of everyone's brains, like you could have answer any question you want, right?
Right.
But it's not like that. It's siloed. So where does it show up? You know, you're a CSM at a company, you're a salesperson. Customer says, hey, what's the best practice on using this new feature in the healthcare industry? Now, if you happen to be a CSM that's been around a long time, or you have a customer just like that, you say, oh yeah, here's the best practice. In fact, here's the intro. If you're not somebody who knows the answer, what do you do? You go on Slack or Teams, say, hey, does anyone have a customer like this? Super inefficient. So I believe the big power of AI is combining all of our knowledge into like a collective brain, breaking those silos, maybe eventually merging the roles together. So a CSM armed with a co-pilot can have these superpowers to even help in other areas. You know, so we built some of that in Gainsight now. But that's like the most emerging, like that's the frontier, I would call it. But what's super exciting, if I wrap it all up, is everyone wants to do this. And the interest level is off the charts right now. Yeah. Very exciting. I'm going 100 hours on that. So I'll stop.
Yeah. No, I mean, it is. I'm with you. I'm actually super bullish on ultimately what the impact of AI is going to be. I think it's going to create better customer experiences, better employee experiences for lots of different reasons. But I'll just tell you my own personal journey on this. You know, we started to do research on AI use cases across everything, right? CS, SS, field service, education. We wanted to find out what were people really doing with it, right? The difference between the hype. And so we've been on this journey for about 2 years, but one of the first case studies I did was around education services. And OpenText is one of our members, and they were working with an AI startup. And so I was, you know, interviewing the executive, you know, doing this pilot. And when she explained to me the capabilities where the tool can take in, and like you're talking about knowledge, right? So a company has all this knowledge, like your PS consultants have tons of knowledge, and sometimes it's in PowerPoint, and sometimes it's in whatever. And it, they were ingesting everything, right? From product manuals, but insights from PS, from support, and then using that to generate training materials in 30% of the effort. I was like, whoa, this is a game changer. And to your point, the end game, I think, which is going to be beautiful, is anybody touching the customer, your employees are going to be interacting with your own internal AI tool saying, hey, I'm working with customer A, what problems have they been having? What's their biggest, you know, you're going to be able to ask it anything, and it's going to give you right there where that customer is at, instead of fumbling around like we do now in this stovepipe world. It's going to be, it's going to be so cool. Now, I mean, what do you think though, is those tools unfold? Let's go back to the core thought here around customer success. How does the role of the CSM change? By the way, I was speaking to a CEO of an AI startup about 2 months ago, and he said, look, he said the same thing you did. We have way too many hours of people just inputting data into systems, really smart, talented people. He said, we got to get them out of that business, right? But is that, you know, is the tools make that easier? Well, how does the CSM spend their day? What do you envision there?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because you're right. Once you reclaim all that wasted time updating systems, including Gainsight or CRM, and you have this time, what do I do with it? Of course, one approach is you just get more efficient. I think the more interesting thing is there's two ways to reinvest the time. One way, I believe, like it's almost like two different directions for a given CSM. One way is, of course, for them to get more commercial, right? And then you could kind of collapse some of the, what might people might call an account management responsibility or sales responsibility for, let's say, small upsells or the renewals. Right now, a lot of CSMs have a hard time doing that because you're just so busy with all this manual work, right?
Yeah.
So I think I could imagine a cohort of CSMs becoming more commercial, particularly for companies that have a higher volume of smaller customers, where it's very inefficient to have an account manager and a CSM touching a customer.
Yep.
Imagine the customer spending $20,000 a year and you have two people on that, right? Like, and there's a lot of businesses that have that exact model. That's one way to do it. Now, let's say you have big customers. I believe, especially if you have kind of big industry-oriented customers, much like sales is gotten, in many cases, verticalized.
Yep.
Salesforce did this. I believe the CS role, once it's more efficient, can get more verticalized. So you can go to a customer and not just be like, oh, I can tell you my product, but be like, you know what? I understand the, you know, life sciences industry. I understand what's involved in getting a drug through clinical trials. In fact, I may have even worked in that industry. And I'm going to be an advisor to you on mapping your business goals to what capabilities the product has. And I think a lot of CSMs, they can do it at a very checkbox level, right? But it feels like it's filling out a form. Tell me your goals, right? Like that kind of thing, right?
Right.
Versus, you know what? I worked at Pfizer and I actually understand how complicated the clinical trials process is. And let me show you how our new compliance technology will help you. Like that kind of a thing, which again, people are doing on the sales side.
Yeah.
I think we will be able to do now on the post-sales side, and the customer is going to love it.
Yeah. You're on a thread here that has come up on this podcast, multiple guests, which is this verticalization, right? The ability to speak, you know, in a more vertical language. And I think that that is a winning capability. I think AI is going to accelerate that capability for companies. And to your point, you know, not just on the sales, but on the CS side. But the other thing you put on the table, again, this blurring of the CS and the sales motions, I think AI is going to accelerate that. And it's going to make all of them smarter, but more collaborative. And, you know, earlier you were talking about the pod model. I didn't mention it, but we went to that model, TSIA. We took our, we took our CS organization, which actually used to report to me, and we put it under a CRO, and who obviously also had sales, and he created these pods. And I think it's a winning move, because I do really think that, again, the technology is going to help here, but those roles, they just got to be so collaborative in general. But what they're doing is going to blur, because it's not, like you said, so much that people are on, you know, spending so much time, you know, down in the weeds on the CS stuff or down in the weeds on the sales stuff. They can both step up and be more collaborative on the value side. So it's going to be super interesting.
I love that you said that, because I think another, I wouldn't call it advice, because who am I to give advice? But another thing I think a lot about is we're in such a secular shift in technology, not a cyclical one. And in that type of a shift, you need to rethink everything. One of our company values is Shoshin, which is the Japanese word for beginner's mind. And so it's about approaching everything as a beginner. And I think we all in the industry need to say, yeah, sure, we've always done it this way, marketing, SDR, sales rep, but that might not make sense anymore, you know?
Let's rethink.
Let's try new experiments. Let's try new things.
Yep.
You can't keep doing the same.
Yeah, no. I agree with you. I think this is a seismic shift. You know, to be honest with you, I think most of the people I'm talking to in tech, I don't think have really, at leadership levels, have truly internalized what a seismic shift this is.
Oh my gosh.
You know, I think they know, AI. But I just don't think that they get that this is not going to be like, you know, the move from mainframe to client server or client server to the internet from on-prem to the cloud. We basically kept the same operating models in play. We're going to come out the other side with different operating models that we're not going to recognize.
100%. I mean, one thing if I had to close out this is, I know we're almost out of time, is what is happening? Tech is becoming measured and thought of like a regular business. Like, it's funny because I talk to some CEOs, particularly like earlier career CEOs or whatever, and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe I have to generate profit. I'm like, call the CEO of Procter & Gamble or General Mills or Ford, and they will have zero sympathy for you because it's such a funny thing because what's just happening is tech is now being held in the same rules as the rest of the world. We had a 30, 40, 50 year holiday and now it's changing. And look no further than the companies who've done it amazingly well, Oracle, Broadcom, now Salesforce, Microsoft. It's like very doable, but it takes a different mind.
It does. So I think that's a great place to leave it today. I'm watching the clock as well here. And again, I think for the audience, this is interesting times for CS organizations, but really for our business models in general. And I think your advice is really good, which is, lean into it with a beginner's mind and say, hey, what could the new operating models look like? Let's embrace that. So I'm going to end with my question of the day for everybody. This debate about the value of customer success, unfortunately, I got to tell you, is not going away. Are you prepared to win that debate? Cheers, everybody.